Well, once again, the theme of our message is presented clearly in the song, at least that last one. That's the whole point of being not double-minded. Really, ultimately, the end of our solution to our problems is a focus on Him and away from our own troubles and woes and what it is that makes me distracted. Again, we're looking at double-mindedness. And while James makes one specific explicit statement regarding the cause of double-mindedness, a lack of faith when asking for wisdom, it could be said that the entire book of James, it could be argued at least that it is all about avoiding double-mindedness, avoidance of the things that distract us from a wholehearted devotion to the Lord. Now, while my hope would be that I would be able to make a clear presentation and description of what wholehearted devotion to the Lord looks like, in all sincerity, honesty, and openness, I'm not entirely sure what wholehearted devotion to the Lord looks like because I haven't quite experienced it in my life. I'm working diligently toward this, but I haven't arrived there. Now, in the meantime, all I can do is kind of hope to paint what is hopefully an accurate sketch, and with the hopes that the master will come back in, the master painter, and will paint a picture that is true to life. For some reason, I thought this week about, as I was thinking this week about this lesson, and I was kind of meditating on the book of James, as I was going to sleep one night, and I began to think about the potter and the clay. And I began to focus on how There's a correlation here between that phrase, concept, and notion that the Lord paints for us in that picture and what it is to be double-minded and not to be double-minded and how it relates very nicely to a devotion of wholehearted devotion to Him. Double-mindedness in James is it's explicitly stated in James 1, 2, or 3, whatever that is, that where it says, 1, 4, I think, where he says, ask for wisdom, ask in unfaith, that's double-mindedness. But going throughout the entire book of James, you can find lots of examples of double-mindedness. I'm coming back to the potter and clay thing in just a minute. But he says, don't ask, not letting endurance have its perfect effect, not asking God without faith, pursuits of wealth, selfish desires, anger, filth and evil excess, listening and not doing, listening and forgetting, or an unbridled tongue, and not caring for the needy. Those are examples in chapter 1 alone of things that say, you know, you're either here or you're there. And James is just clear on this stuff. He really doesn't mince words. He says, look, if you're going to do it, if you're going to be a doer of the word and not just a hearer of the word, then this is what it looks like. And let me give you some very specific examples. And if you're not doing this, then you're over here somewhere. Chapter 2, he goes on with more specific examples of double-minded distractions. He talks about showing favor towards the rich. He talks about faith without works. He talks about speaking out of both sides of the mouth, blessing God, cursing man. About jealousy, selfishness, which leads to disorder and evil. About selfish desires. He talks about friendship with the world. He talks about speaking against one another. And, of course, there's the ever-important etc., which is all of chapter 5. There are lots and lots of examples in there. I could go into more details about these, but we'll get to them as we come to it. The point is this. The explicit statement of double-mindedness in chapter 1 is ask for wisdom, ask without faith. That is an example of double-mindedness. And by the way, as we looked at the specific wording there, it doesn't actually necessarily say one is the purpose, which one's the purpose and which is the cause. And this is some of the difficulty when you get to some of these statements. He says, ask for wisdom, and it will be given to you by our God. But ask without faith, ask without doubting, for doubting you'll be like the waves of the sea tossed to and fro, a double-minded man unstable in all his ways. But he doesn't say, You will be a double. There's no verb in there. You will be doesn't say, or you are asking with doubting because you're a double-minded man. Which is it? Is it? So I go, Lord, I want wisdom. I'm not sure if you're going to give it to me. Therefore, I'm double-minded. Or is it, I'm double-minded. I've got a double devotion. I'm devoted to this, and I'm devoted to the Lord, and I'm kind of wishy-washy and going back and forth. And therefore, when I ask for wisdom, I'm not sure he's going to give it to me. So is double-mindedness the cause, or is it the result? Well, reality, double-mindedness is both the cause and the result. And sometimes in these things, you can't really make a clear distinction because it's a circle. That's the whole point of what we're looking at here. It's that vicious circle that we get ourselves into. If at one point in time I am double-minded because of a lack of faith, then next time I will probably have less faith because of my double-mindedness. And I will also next time be more likely to be double-minded because of my lack of faith. You see how we get into this vicious cycle. And that's the whole point of this thing. How do we get out, stay out, and be out of the vicious cycle? Now back to the clay. Come to find out, I have, you know, like fishing, which I talked about in Sunday school. I haven't worked with clay a whole lot in my life, all right? When I was in fifth grade, I'm sure it was, maybe fourth grade. But in some point in time, you know, you made something out of clay. By the way, when we were in school, you made ashtrays. I think back on that, I'm like, what's the deal? The teacher had us make ashtrays. That's weird. Do you guys make ashtrays in school? See, that doesn't happen today, does it? That, in the good old, back when I was in school, we actually made ashtrays. So I don't know a whole lot about clay, to be honest with you, but I did a little bit of research. I wanted to, I've had clay in my hand, and I've squished it, and I've tried to make stuff out of it. But there's evidently a lot to this thing of clay. Now, if you're gonna use clay, and the Lord uses the analogy, and we'll look at a couple of those passages here in a minute about Him being the potter and us being the clay, right? So if He's gonna make something out of us, He's got to get that clay ready. We have clay in our ground. We got a lot of it. We got that and rocks. And so you dig down through the great topsoil they put in when they build our development, about half an inch. And it's supposed to be 4 inches. But you get through that half inch topsoil, and then you get like clay. And I learned about this because we had our evaporation from the condensation line from the AC. It was producing a lot of condensation. Where it comes out, it was not sloped right. It wasn't running off, so it was pooling right there. So I built a little bitty trench, and I thought it would kind of collect right there and then evaporate. Well, it just collects right there, and it collects right there, and then it went backed up into the thing, so I had to build a bigger one. Now I got this whole, like my whole yard is basically a French drain for my AC line. So, but that's because we have clay, and it doesn't go anywhere. If it doesn't run downhill, it's not going to soak into the ground. It's just going to sit there. But the clay is hard. If you've ever, you know, especially after it gets more dry, unlike this year, you start to dig a little bit, and that stuff is hard. Now, I dig some of that out of the ground. I'm not going to make anything out of it, not without working a lot with it first. And there's a lot to do with clay. Come to find out, I'll do a little bit of research on clay. So I found this website, and this guy talks all about preparation for clay work. Now there's a lot to it. Evidently, he's got all these different steps. He talks about you got to take the clay, and you got to do that, and you got to do this, and he's got all these things until you finally get to the end. And the key is at the end, you want your clay to be mixed well, and you want it to be evenly soft. Like you don't want to run and rub your finger along it, and you don't want there to be hard spots and then soft spots. You want it to be even, evened out, and prepared and ready for use. Come to find out, there's a whole bunch of steps. So you're trying to get from clay to clay that's useful, and this guy's got all these different steps, and you click on each one of these things, you've got specific directions and details about it. Now, my point is not to go into a detailed lesson about how to use clay, but there's one thing you learn from all this. Even before you can make something out of the clay, you got to get the clay ready. You got to soften it. You got to get some of the impurities out of it. And it takes some preparation work to even get to the point of making something. Bunch of steps in there. And I really don't know what they are all. I really don't care. But I do know that unprepared clay is only a wet paperweight at the best. In Texas, it's just a dry one. So to get clay to the point where we can make something out of it, you've got to prepare it, you've got to soften it, you've got to mix it, you've got to blend it, you've got to even it. Even before it's ready to be molded, made, or shaped into something. Now this applies to you and I as well. And let's look at some of what he said about clay. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," is the one who shined in our hearts to give us the light of the glorious knowledge of God in the face of Christ. That's good stuff. But we have this treasure in clay jars so that the extraordinary power belongs to God and does not come from us. Now, I love this passage because it talks about the light shining out of darkness. Who's the darkness? Me, right? And the light shines out of the darkness. And then he calls me a clay jar. And he says, well, what's great about that is light shines out of a clay jar, which is not translucent. So there's something special going on here. And the primary key is that we're more reflective than we are transmittive. God's light and power is reflected off of us as we become and imitate Him. But look at the next phrase. Do you know what follows this statement? Anybody? This is great stuff. Are you ready? I copied this right from the Bible. We are experiencing trouble on every side, but are not crushed. We are perplexed, not driven to despair. We are persecuted, but not abandoned. We are knocked down, but not destroyed. Wow, did you know that that passage about clay was right before the passage about the trouble? That's pretty cool, because how is it that he makes us a clay jar? Well, in order to get to the point of being a clay jar, he had to go through some steps to get there. Clay had to be ready, and then had to be molded and made and shaped until ultimately you get to something that looks like that. But it takes the troubling, it takes the perplexing, it takes the persecution, it takes the knockdown. Whatever it takes for you, it may be different than me. Always carrying around in our, and here's the key, always carrying around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be made visible in our body. So we carry around His death so that life can be seen. For we who are alive are constantly being handed over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus may also be made visible in our mortal bodies, in our clay jars, in our very simple things. As a result, death is at work in you, but life is at work in you. Death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. Now look, so a couple things happen here as a result of this manufacturing process. The power belongs to God and does not come from us, back in verse 7. So, and then before that, it is the light of the glorious knowledge of God. So there's glory that comes from this. There's the power of God that is displayed. And there's the life of Jesus that's displayed. All in this, and what it takes to get there is some of this a few times around the circle, right? Now, but I'm not even talking about going around the circle. I'm talking about getting out of the vicious circle or the vicious cycle, the pit that we get ourselves into, and getting into the right circle. But that's coming, so hang on. Before we can even get there, sometimes he has to rework the clay. Now, this is the passage where, we'll just read it. Jeremiah, the Lord said to Jeremiah, "Go down at once to the potter's house. I will speak to you further there." So I went, and I found him working at his wheel, and now and then there would be something wrong with the pot that he was molding from the clay with his hands. So he would rework the clay into another kind of pot as he saw fit. That's what you call going with the flow, right? Now, so then the Lord said to me, "I, the Lord, say, O nation of Israel, can I not deal with you as the potter deals with the clay? In my hands, you, O nation of Israel, are just like the clay in this potter's hands. There are times, Jeremiah, when I threaten to uproot, tear down, and destroy a nation or kingdom, but But if that nation I threaten stops doing wrong, I will cancel the destruction I intended to do to it. And there are times when I promise to build up and to establish a nation or kingdom. But if that nation does not displease me and does not obey me, then I will cancel the good I promised to do to it. So now tell the people of Judah and the citizens of Jerusalem this. The Lord says, I'm preparing to bring disaster on you. I'm making plans to punish you. So every one of you, stop the evil things you've been doing. Correct the way you are, the way you've been living, and do what is right. But they just keep saying, we don't care what you say. We'll do whatever we want to do. We will continue to behave wickedly and stubbornly. I don't want to confuse issues here. This is a specific statement to a specific nation at a specific period of time. So let's not lose our dispensational distinctives here. But there's also very clear generalities being made in this statement. Look, in fact, even though he's talking specifically to Israel, what does he say in general? But if that nation, he says, there are times when I threaten to uproot a nation. So there's a general notion here is that God, sometimes he says, I got a plan. This is my plan for you. And so you go, oh, that's a good plan. I like that plan, Lord. And you go down the road and you start doing what he wants you to do and he starts using you. And then you go, you know, I really don't care what you say. And I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And I'm going to continue to behave wickedly and stubbornly. And the Lord says, all right, so I was going to make this kind of pot out of you. Now I'm going to make what do you call those pots where they used to have the next to the bed?
Chamber pot.
I was going to make a glorious, nice water pot. Now I'm going to make a chamber pot out of you. You get the picture? And so, different function altogether. Now, I wonder if we get to heaven, we'll probably go, Lord, remember there was a time when you kind of made it clear to me that I should be doing this. And that this, maybe this was going to happen. I got the impression this was going to happen. But Lord, that didn't happen. What's the deal? And he may say, well, you're right. I did intend that for you. But at some point in time, you decided to stop obeying me. And so I said, sorry, I'm going to make you into a different kind of pot. But Lord, I was obedient to you at other times. Well, sure you were. I did other things with you. But that function that I initially set out for you, when you did this, it was no longer available. Well, Lord, that's not fair. That was my plan. Sometimes I think that's going to happen. But I think other times we'll get to heaven and we'll say, Lord, you set this out for me and I went into motion to do this and that didn't happen. And he goes, that was your plan. That wasn't my plan. And then there are going to be other times we get to heaven and say, Lord, you set this in motion and then I expected this to happen and it didn't happen. He's going to go, yeah. And I don't have to explain anything to you because I'm God. And that may happen too. I don't know. But it works both ways. There are times when he says, man, you're really messing up and I'm going to do something else with you because I can't use this. I still want this to be done, but someone else is going to have to do it. And then there are times when you go, and you're really messing up. And then you go, Lord, I'm messing up. And he goes, yeah, I know. And you go, I want to change that. And he goes, okay, change it. And he goes, hey, I'm going to turn you from a chamber pot into a water pot. You go, wow, I like that. And he can do that as well. It works both ways. I mean, evidently, it works with the nations. I assume it works with you and I. Unlike us, real non-metaphorical clay, that stuff, but us as people is not actively resistant. There's something different between us and clay. Clay doesn't decide one day to or not to be molded. Clay doesn't decide just how much it wants to be molded. When the molding should end and when it should take a break. The potter is in there with the clay and he's molding it and he says, and the potter says, I'm done. But when the potter is working with you and I, he gives us a choice to say, he does, but he doesn't, you know. In other words, there's consequences when we say, I'm taking a break, Lord. And this wasn't your break time. I'm taking a break anyhow. And there's consequences, but it usually lets you do it. That's where all analogies come to an end. But we do have an opportunity, we have a choice, and we have to specifically exercise the choice of obedience on a constant point. And this is a very important point in the first part of this lesson. To be dedicated to serving Him, not to be double-minded, to avoid the vicious cycle of failure, disappointment, and despair, or to get out of the pit, however you want to put it, requires first and foremost a focus on Him. Clay preparation is prerequisite to our shaping. Shaping that reflects the glory and the power of God and His life and life-giving. Remember the passage, the first one we looked at? He says, you are a vessel of clay, a clay vessel, an earthen vessel. And that doesn't really shine through, but I can reflect off of you. And in order to get there, you have to go through some shaping. Clay that resists is sometimes reshaped, but resubmissive clay, I made up that word, But clay that used to submit and then decided not to submit and then resubmits, that's resubmissive. Resubmissive clay, by the grace of God, can also be used. And this is where we go, okay, look, I'm not in the circle. I'm in the vicious circle or the cycle, but I'm not in the circle where I'm supposed to be. I'm not going through the trial and the character building and all that stuff. I'm not there, Lord. Maybe I'm there in one area, but I'm not there in another area. And He goes, guess what? How did you get out of the circle? I stopped believing. That's ultimately what it is. I stopped believing something. How do you get back into the circle? Well, the same way you got there in the first place. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through the Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we also have access by faith into this grace in which we stand. How do you get into the circle? By faith. How do you get back into the circle? Well, it's the same way. By faith. And rejoice in hope of the glory of God. And not only that, and then there's the circle again in Romans as opposed to James. So whether you're in the circle and want to continue, or whether you're outside of the circle and want to get back in, it all starts and continues with faith and hope, and that's how we are there, and that's how we stay there. So, again, looking at it from the other perspective, the A, B's, and C's, there is acknowledgement that God is able and wants to get you out of this pit, and that God can and will do that. Believe that God will get you out, and that you can't do it yourself, and then you continue to believe that God on an ongoing basis. But the first part of that, and this is where we're going to conclude this pit business and the double-mindedness today, is that the first part is that recognition, acknowledgement, and a focus on Him. Right where He says, turn your eyes upon Jesus. And that's the key to this whole thing. Last week, we summarized James, the first seven verses. Consider trials joy for endurance. Let endurance perfect and complete. God gives wisdom when asked. Don't waver, ask in faith, but receive nothing when double-minded or unstable. Now, the key here is this, and this is where I wanted to get to last week, but I spoke too slowly. The key is this, that we want to have a focus on Him, an acknowledgement of who He is, recognition of Him, His character, His ability, His attributes. If we can do that, if we can focus, turn our eyes upon Jesus, and off of our own woes and off our own needs and trials and tribulations, it will get us out of the pit, because the first part of getting out of the pit is faith. And in order to have faith, you got to have faith in something and someone. And the focus here is on someone. So we looked last week again at the example of immutability. God's immutable. And so because of God's immutability, I can say, hey, James chapter 1 verse 2, consider nothing but joy when you fall into trials of all sorts. How does God's immutability help me there? Because God said something good happens as a result of these trials. And, maybe God's not going to keep with that statement. No, God's immutable. God said, and it's always going to be true. Well, there are some caveats about asking. You got to ask without faith. But he says, look, consider it joy because you know that the testing produces endurance. The immutability of God says, God said that, I can believe it, and therefore when the trial comes, I can put it into that joy bucket, even though I see no reason to put it there myself. Because it will produce endurance. Immutability of God is very helpful. So what are some of the other characteristics and traits of God that may be able to help us? Again, just very quickly to summarize what these traits are. Love, seeking the best for the object without expecting anything in return. Infinity, no bounds or limits in time or space. Eternity, from everlasting to everlasting, and one's more the character and one's the time. Truth, absolute agreement to that which is represented. God is truth. Holiness, totally set apart. Broad gap between the created and the creator. Set apart from sin, although still has joy. Unity, God is one. Sovereign, absolute, complete control of all things. Freedom, God is not dependent on his creatures for anything. He's living. He's omniscient. He's omnipotent. He's omnipresent. He's everywhere. Nothing is impossible without God. With God. And he is righteous. He deals justly in all matters and in all ways. So the question is this. How can we care? I want to make this very real in our lives in an applicable way. So what I want you to do, we're going to work together individually. Now here's the rule. You're going to pick one of these traits, and you're going to work with anywhere between one and three people. So in other words, there should be no reason. You can move from where you're sitting if you want to, but I don't want a group any larger than three people. All right? So that means the front row can't work together as one group. Got it? So you can, and if you're just here by yourself, you can work by yourself. That's fine too. And then what I want you to do is take one of these attributes. You pick whichever one you want. Here's some verses that kind of go that talk about that. You can use the verse or not. But I want you to come up with a detailed, specific, concrete, tangible way in which this attribute or character quality of God will help you get out of a pit, out of a vicious cycle, not be double-minded, whatever phrase you want to put in there. Now, I want you to use either a Bible verse that either talks about one of these character traits or demonstrates the character trait, or even a Bible story about it. You know, David and Goliath, whatever it is, whatever comes to your mind, something from the Bible. And then I want you to, and you can use these verses as well if you want. Now, either one, the character traits or the names of God, I've got the names of God listed here as well. I don't have verses to go with them, all right? Now, I'm going to give you until 10 after, until 5 after, to accomplish this. And so, go. Okay. Who's willing to share their thought on a character trait or a name of God? And their, yes. And speak loudly.
We had omnipotent.
Okay. Okay, that's good. So God's powerful. He can help them out of a help you if he can help them out of a pit. He can certainly help you out of a pit because there's no kind of pit that God can't help us out of. He's powerful. All right, good. What's another one? Yes, sir.
We did a beautiful.
Okay.
It's actually in two ways. Without immutability, the other attributes are useless. And the other thing is how God has been with us in the past.
God what?
How God has been with us in the past.
God's been what in the past?
With us.
Okay. Okay, good. Anybody else?
We trust
free. Okay.
We use the verses in Romans 6:14-18. For sin shall not have dominion over you, if you are not under law, but under grace. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under law, but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey? Whether of sin leading to death, or of the obedience leading to righteousness. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. And what we feel is that we have the option to speak to God, and He will give us the grace that will allow us to have dominion over that sin. And He gives us the ability to choose to put off those chains that are holding us in the pit of fire.
Okay. Now that's good. That's speaking more specifically about our freedom to make those choices. And the what I'm trying to get here is more of an emphasis of how God's attribute as free and not confined to anything, how that helps us. I can tag off of what you said, and that is, I can be free because God is free. That's the kind of thing I'm trying to get to. Thanks. If I criticize what anybody says, then no one's going to say anything. But it's not a criticism. Not a criticism. Very true, too. Anybody else willing to jump into the lion's den?
We did righteous.
Okay. Okay. So now let's talk about that for a second. I'm in a pit, vicious cycle. Can't seem to get out of it. Whatever your pit is, and I say, Lord, you are the Creator. You will do the right thing. We will not be judged incorrectly. Now, how is that going to help me out of a pit? It will. But how is it going to help me out of my pit?
By trusting in Him that He's going to do that thing, He's going to release yourself. I mean, if there's anything that maybe you're in pit, you're down in the pit, and you can trust Him and that He's going to judge correctly.
Okay, good. What?
Give you the confidence.
Okay. All right, good. You know, sometimes getting out of a pit means doing the right thing that I wasn't willing to do. Not doing the wrong thing anymore. It's doing the right thing that I'm maybe afraid to do or have a fear of doing for whatever reason. Maybe I'm afraid of being judged by someone else. For that, and if I'm making a righteous, if I'm doing out of obedience what God has called me to do, well, I might be judged by someone else. It doesn't keep that from happening, but the righteous Creator won't judge me for not doing it. Good. All right. One more.
We did holy, and we used 1 Peter 13:1, which says, therefore, prepare your minds for action, be self-controlled, set your hope on grace. It's given to you to be obedient children, do not conform. So we looked at it as a preparation for action to get us out of the pit, and preparing our mind, being self-controlled, setting our hope, being obedient and disciplined, because God told us, be holy because I am holy by doing these things.
Okay, good. We're to be like Him. So we begin to focus on that. We think through that. Wow. If I'm if part of the reason I'm in a pit is because I am doing something I shouldn't be doing, well, it's to reflect on Him and His righteousness, His holiness, His purity will help me not to be in that pit anymore. Good. All right. Those are all good things. And what I'm just trying to help you to do is to think through some specific examples of, wow, God. Every attribute of God is not there for us. Now, God didn't say, I'm going to be holy because I think you need me to be holy. He's holy because He's holy. But every one of these attributes can be a benefit to us and are certainly designed, maybe not because of that, but certainly will be. Back to the idea, clay preparation is a prerequisite to our shaping. We can resist that shaping, or we can yield to that shaping, and part of that is reflecting on who is shaping us. And I say, God, You are the God who will shape me, and I submit to that. And I admit and acknowledge I am not God, but He is God, and what it is about God that is so great. So I can ask, and He will give. I can acknowledge Him. I can believe, and I can continue in that. I don't know if these are the right pictures to go along with these character traits or not, but you know, you can think about clay is hard, and it's unshapely, and has nothing pretty about it. Base. It's very base. And then you begin to pound some force into it and put some strength behind it. And you begin to make it smoother and evened out. And then you can begin to shape it some more. And eventually you have something that looks beautiful out of it. And now you can go through the cycle again knowing who it is that does this for us and how it is He does. Before we I want to take just a minute and pray, and I didn't time this exactly right, but so we're going to go just a minute long. But I want to pray, and then we'll talk about next week's lesson and our preparation for that. Lord, You are an awesome God. Everything about You is far superior to everything about us. And there are many reasons I find myself in a pit, and we all do, and it can be disobedience, it can be an unholy actions, it can be even innocuous things such as things that other people have caused me to get in for. Maybe something I haven't done, but lack of continued faith will keep me from living for You. And so we want to reflect on You, Your character, Your nature, who You are, everything about You. And as we begin to focus on You, we will just find ourselves living for You. And I pray that You give us the wisdom to do that. And we ask without wavering. We know that You will. And then as we have the wisdom, give us the courage to continue in it. And help us to see that we know, as You say in James, we know that the trials produce perseverance and endurance and character. And we know that You can have Your perfect will experienced in our lives, and we can be transformed to reflect Your power and Your glory and Your life and life-giving characteristics to the world around us. And I pray that You'll give us what it is we need to do that. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Read through verses 9 through 16 in particular this week. You'll notice that there's a lot of discussion about, well, let's just look at the challenge for next week. Read James 3 to 5 times. And list any verses that talk about wealth, riches, money, affluence, prosperity, possessions, treasure, fortune, holiness, holdings, worldly goods, mammon, cash, lucre, desires, getting and receiving, or just plain stuff. You don't have to write down that list because it's all the same thing. Just look for, there's a lot of stuff that talks about that, and especially the verses we're coming up on next week, and then several other portions in there that discuss it. And what I want you to do is just kind of list any of those verses, and then go back after your list and summarize each one. give it a little summary, and then draw some conclusions about what he's saying about these things and how it reflects upon our life and living for him. All right? There's your assignment. Go to it.